Hey everyone, and welcome to Sox Talk on the Air right here on SoxTalk.com. I am Mario Scalise coming to you from Chicago. And in California, it's Jason Gage. We're back once again after another little hiatus.
Yeah, we're sorry about the hiatus, but it's good to be back talking White Sox baseball. And we're hoping, you know, that you did actually miss us because it would say you actually cared. And we're going to do our best to be back and consistently performing every week, giving you guys our intakes on the White Sox.
Since the break, it's been a very poopy White Sox team. They've been losing a whole bunch of ways, whether it's their offense getting completely shut down or their, you know, their defense or their rotation. Obviously been struggling for most of the year, and then their bullpen. 4-11, though. Start off, you know, they lost to the Yankees, had trouble with the Tigers, the Rangers, the Twins, and they could have very easily, in this last series against the Baltimore Orioles, swept them. And yesterday's game, ugly. Saturday's game was ugly, and this is against the Baltimore Orioles.
In Friday's game, there's a little bit of magic, because just as easy as we could have swept them, we really weren't that all far off from getting swept ourselves, because Friday, it took Glow to hit a Grand Slam home run off their closer, their very good closer they have, and then Saturday, it was just an ugly back-and-forth type game where we had a big lead, and it just kept getting closer and closer, and Sunday, we take the lead, we fall behind, we take the lead, we fall behind, then we take the lead, we thought we had it for good, and Bobby Jenks blew it. I mean, it was his only second blown save of the season, but Jenks has given up quite a few runs in the month of July. And it's been ugly baseball. The only real bright side has been John Garland pitching. He's 3-0 since the All-Star break.
Yes.
And our team is 4-11, so that just kind of tells you how everything's went.
Every start, it's pretty much the Sox have a chance to win only when he goes, and in some cases, Jose Contreras, depending who he's going up against, of course. But the deadline is only a few hours away. We can't really get into too much details because by the time most of the listeners are going to be, you know, popping this in their iPod or whatever, deadline's going to be over, and who knows, the Sox may make a trade. But at this time, do you expect Williams to do anything? Do you believe him when he says that he's done?
Yes. I think he's done. Alfonso Soriano, sure his name's out there. Miguel Tejada, sure his name's out, though. And those are sexy names. But they don't make the White Sox a World Series contender. The only thing that makes this team a World Series contender, and really a playoff contender, or anything even worth watching, is this pitching staff getting off, stop pitching like they are, and start pitching like they're capable of, or like they did last season. That is the only thing. That's the only upgrade we could possibly make.
I agree.
To turn into a winning team. Alfonso Soriano does nothing. It's just a Band-Aid to maybe score more runs. But you know what? You can't score more runs in the playoffs.
And here's
you better
the thing.
Limit other teams to fewer runs.
Here's the thing. Even if you go out there and you trade for a starter, even if you go out and do that, that still only gives you three starters in this rotation right now who would be effective. Because whatever guy you're bringing in, he would obviously be an effective pitcher. You would still only have three starters. And that's not a World Series team. Because, Garland and Contreras and whoever it is you get. So no matter what, Burley has got to get it going. Because he's obviously not the guy to get traded. He's the one who's got to get going. I think it all starts with him. I think once he gets going, I think everything will slowly fall into place from there. You obviously have Garcia who's got to get his act together. And who knows if it's a velocity thing or what. Javier Vasquez, it's tough to watch him now. He's very, very effective for five innings. And I'm sure people are listening to this, have heard this, and they talked about this for the last, two, 3 weeks now. But first five innings, he's fine. Sixth, seventh inning, he gets knocked around. Yeah, is there any solution?
It's real interesting because he has such good stuff, and I've slammed Vasquez more than anyone else, obviously on the show, but that's just because it's you and me, and I'm the one doing the slamming most of the time. But it's getting frustrating, and it's kind of like a hit comes up, and it's like he knows, oh, there it goes, I'm going to start giving up runs, because I think it's all mental right now.
Yeah.
And I do think Darren Jackson did bring up a valid point in yesterday's telecast. He was talking about the fact that Vasquez shows the batters too many pitches. And by that, I'm not saying he throws too many pitches. That's a whole other argument. But he shows them almost all of his pitches in one at-bat. And that's usually not something a starting pitcher does. Usually they'll show a couple of their pitches to a hitter, but they'll keep something in reserve for later on.
Yes.
And Vasquez doesn't do that, so I don't know if that's also coming into effect.
He has the capabilities.
For the most part.
He has the capabilities early in the game, as long as he's throwing strikes. Because if you're not throwing strikes early, you're eventually going to have to get all your pitches. out there, but if he's aggressive and he's throwing strikes, he could live off his fastball for a little while early in the game and save his changeup and his slider and even his curveball for later on.
Well, I mean, he's going to have to – but here's the thing. If you go up to a batter, don't show him all four pitches. And don't show him all four in the first two at-bats.
Yes.
I understand if you need to show all four because you're in a crucial situation, like bases are loaded. In that case, you know, do whatever you got to do. But the big thing with Vasquez, and there's reason, Vasquez is better than Mark Burley and Freddie Garcia are, because at least Vasquez keeps us in the game for five innings, and at least he's showing us the stuff that it takes an ace, because he's throwing a fastball 95 mile an hour, and that thing's got some serious movement. His changeup's outstanding. His slider is good, but it hangs way too much. And his curveball is pretty decent.
But at least he's doing something.
I mean, he has the capability. Yeah.
You know,
and
Burley,
I know
you can't
it's frustrating. Burley's getting hit. He gives up every lead we have. At least Vasquez protects the lead for five innings. And that's obviously, that's not enough. But it's better than what Burley's doing. And it's definitely better than what Garcia's doing as well. Because right now, if we're going to take any starter out of the rotation, it would have to be Mark Burley.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we let's be honest here. The guy, I love Mark Burley. But, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
It's just ugly.
Really,
and
you know,
this
Javier
Vasquez.
Javier Vasquez has been the scapegoat, and even Garcia in a little while, but Burley is the main guy. And I'm confident he's going to eventually figure this out. I think he's a smart pitcher. I think he's going to get his head together. I don't think it's an injury problem. I'm not even sure if it's a mechanical problem. I think it's just all in his head right now. I think he's going to figure it out. But right now, he is by far their worst pitcher.
Well, the thing that frustrates me is a lot of times when Burley gets hit, it's always an excuse. He's tipping his pitches. Someone's signaling signs so they know it's coming. The fact of the matter is Mark Burley can't locate.
You know
and
what?
When Mark Burley can't
and
locate, he's going to get hit.
Not to get off on a little tangent here, but if you remember a few weeks ago when somebody was questioning the White Sox when it came to having the signal in center field at U.S. Cellular Field.
We made fun of it.
And what did Hawk say? Hawk and DJ were, this is ridiculous. Why would they do that? Yet, when other teams do it, they make fun of the other team for making excuses. But Mark Burley has done it a couple times, I believe. Didn't he do it with the Rangers last year?
Yeah, he did it with the Rangers with the light signaling.
Yes. So Burley does it just as much as any other pitcher or any other team. So it goes both ways. But, you know, before we go back to the rotation, there were a couple moves made with the deadline. One was Mike McDougal, which I think was the bigger of the two, with the other one being Sandy Alomar. But Mike McDougal was brought in. He's a flamethrower who has injury problems. What were your thoughts when that happened? Do you think he could stay healthy?
No, I don't. I don't ever believe a guy that's proven that he gets hurt will stay healthy. That doesn't mean he can't. Did I believe Tom Gordon would have stayed healthy these last 6 years or 5 years?
There
no.
You go.
But he figured things out. He made mechanical adjustments, or he built some strength up, or, you know, whatever happened, and Tom Gordon went on to have, you know, a pretty darn good, impressive five-year run. And in McDougal's case, the arm is there. The stuff is there. He has a great fastball with sinking action. He throws a hard slider that's nasty. And the only question is, can he throw strikes? And we do have a pitching coach that's pretty good at getting guys to throw strikes. We saw him do that with Matt Thornton, and it's really paid off. And can he stay healthy? And obviously, we have a lot of relievers now, and I actually think if all goes well, we have the best bullpen in baseball.
Talent-wise, yes. When you take in Thornton, when you take in Jenks, and you put McDougal in there, those are three flamethrowers. And then you have Neil Kotz, who has the capabilities of figuring it out. So, yeah, I mean, I do think the bullpen's deep. When it comes to McDougal, though, the one thing, and I know the Sox are in a very delicate situation right now because they have to win, and you have to try to win at all costs, and that means McDougal might have to be pitching late in the games. But when I look at McDougal, I don't like the way he throws. I think an injury is going to happen. I always just assume it. I think they have to be very careful in not putting him in a key role late in the game, because if they get comfortable with him pitching in the eighth, ninth innings, you don't want an injury come September that's going to completely, you know, kill this bullpen. You know, if you rely on McDougal to be an eighth, ninth inning pitcher, and then come September he gets hurt, now you're left with a very big hole in there. So I would like, at least for now, at least for the next few weeks into August, for them to keep McDougal in the middle relief role. As much as people may be tempted to put him late if he's successful, I would like to keep him in that sixth, seventh inning role. And, you know, late in the season when you got the stretch run going and they're in the middle of it, which they should be, then you could go to extremes and get him pitching late. But I don't know if I want to have him pitching late and get used to him and have those expectations for him to be there late in the game for the setup role.
See, I don't think Ozzie ever does that. I mean, Neil Cotts could be used anywhere from the sixth to eighth inning. McDougal, same case, sixth to eighth inning. So he's going to pitch in eighth innings of ball games. I'm sure if the matchups work out and
We're not
Ozzie's
talking
gut
about
feels this
actually
way.
having the set set up role.
I don't think Ozzie's ever really done that. I mean, obviously it was Polite and Cotts in the eighth inning a lot last year, and then we had Hermanson closing, and then Jenks came in and replaced Hermanson. But the only questionable part about this trade is the arms the team gave up, because this is a thin pitching staff. They gave up a lefty that really has some upside, and he's going to be in the Royals starting rotation as soon as next year, and we're talking about Tyler Lumsden. He was really strong in Double-A. He throws a mid-90 fastball. The strikeouts weren't there, but people don't realize this guy was coming off. He missed a full season, and the White Sox, their coaching staff, and the Birmingham Barons pitching coach worked specifically with Lumsden and told him, I don't care about the strikeout. Right now, we want you to get healthy, and the best way to do that is to limit the amount of pitches you throw to batters. And how do you do that? Instead of pitching for the strikeout, you pitch to contact. And I actually think in the long run, having like a season where you do that and focus on that is going to help you so much more in your career, because it makes you an aggressive pitcher.
Yes, I agree.
And then they gave up a young guy that I've seen some scouts even compare to a John Garland. He's 6'5". He throws pretty hard. He's got a real good arm, but he's an A-ball pitcher. I really think the Royals did a fantastic job getting what they did for McDougal. And if McDougal stays healthy, it could be a good trade, or this could backfire and be one of the worst trades Ken Williams has ever made. And there's no easy way to say that about it, because McDougal could not pitch. You know, I realize we have him under contract for the next couple of years because of arbitration and everything else. So if we want him, we can keep him. And that is a really nice thing, because we could have him, Thornton, Cotts, and Jenks all pitching for a long time in our bullpen, giving us a pretty dominant bullpen, kind of like how Anaheim is for a long time had a pretty good bullpen, because they had Donnelly, they had K-Rod, and they had Shields, and they've all been kind of under contract. So the Angels are able to keep him, and you really have a real consistent part in that 7th, 8th, 9th inning mode.
And it makes it a little easier to build a team around that. Not build a team around that, but get your big pieces knowing that those little pieces are filled in. You know, when it comes to trading minor leaguers, I don't mind it. You know me, I don't really care. Unless you're in a situation where you could get a lot more. And for Tyler Lumsden, who seemed like one of the top prospects in the Sox system, maybe you could get a little more, or at least maybe in talent you got a lot, but maybe you could got a little more in terms of durability and reliability.
Yeah, and I'd rather see him give up Tyler Lumsden for a guy like McDougal that could actually, help us for a few years than I just have to hope that the Sox saw a flaw. Either they saw McDougal used to throw a certain way, and now that he's came back, he's throwing a different way, so they feel he's already pitching better, so he's not going to get hurt, or Cooper knows something or saw something and asked, because obviously Cooper asked to get Thornton, and that paid off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he asked to get Javi Vasquez, but I'm going to be Vasquez has his own problems, and we don't know if he listens to Cooper, and obviously Cooper needs time. It took a long time to get Jose Contreras, and Jose Contreras has some of the best stuff in baseball, and it still took Cooper a while. Cooper had a full season really to work with him, considering the All-Star break, and then it didn't take him till July is when Contreras really started pitching.
And even if Cooper did want him, you can't always assume that every single guy a pitching coach wants he's going to work with. A guy like Matt Thornton's going to work, but for every Matt Thornton, you may get a Javier Vasquez who, as much as you may try and as much as a pitching coach may feel that he could change him, it may never happen. But going to Matt Thornton, when the Sox got him, a lot of question marks with him, but he has been, if there's been a bright spot for the season, it's been him. I mean, he's pretty much put himself in the category where he could be a top of the line reliever for many years as long as he stays healthy. And it seems like the way he throws is a pretty easy throwing motion.
Yeah, he just looks so smooth out on that mound. He's throwing strikes. I mean, he's getting guys. The only thing I wonder is if eventually people are going to pretty much sit on that fastball. But it's when you're throwing strikes and you're commanding it, it's pretty hard pitch to sit on, especially because he'll occasionally, and his slider's not great. But when you throw 98 mile an hour, you don't have to have a great slider.
Nope.
You really don't, especially when you're throwing it from the left side, and it just sneaks up so easy because his motion is so simple.
Yeah, and as a lefty, when you're throwing 98 as a right-hander and that's all you have, you could get hit because people are sitting on it. But with sitting on a 90-mile-an-hour fastball from a left-hander, it's not as easy to do, I would think. So going to Sandy Alomar, though, they got rid of Chris Widger. Obviously, the trade, I'm sure a lot of people were happy about that because Widger really didn't do much this year, offensively or really behind the plate. Really not much of an asset. So when you bring Sandy Alomar, who actually had decent numbers, I think he was been, what, over 300 with the Dodgers?
Yeah, but he only played in,
yeah, in a few games.
He played in a handful of games.
Yes.
And this move reaps to two things. Number one, Sandy Alomar is going to be coaching for the White Sox next year. If it were up to me,
Baines wants to leave, right?
And I realize I'm going to throw this out right now. I honestly think Ozzie Guillen is not going to be here very long. I've came to that decision. I've been very frustrated with a lot of the way he's handled things. I think he's a pretty good manager in the sense of players. I think he gets the best out of his players most of the time. But he does so many questionable things. He says so many questionable things that you can just tell it's going to be short run.
Because
when this team starts losing and gets bad, it's going to get really ugly with Ozzie Guillen.
I agree with you 100%. And I've said that for, God, really early in his tenure with the Sox. He's a guy where if things are going great, he's obviously a fun guy to watch, a fun guy to listen to. But when things get bad, and you know this media, and it's not necessarily all on Guillen, the media is going to go out there and jump on him. They're going to get him to explode because it's going to be entertaining when it does happen. And then they simply fire him, or he retires, or you know resigns, or whatever, and you get another guy in here. But yeah, I do agree with you. If things get worse, or even if they make the playoffs this year, you could see them. You could see him not being here much longer past. If he goes into next year, maybe not much into next year.
Yeah, I actually think that we have two guys ready to become managers on our team, and I think we actually have two guys that would be better long-term managers and better managers for this team because I think Ozzie's best with a scrappy team.
Mm-hmm.
And this team right now is better to pretty much be allowed to manage itself because this is a veteran ball club we have now.
Yeah.
And Ozzie... And
if you look at the way Guillen has handled this team, let's catch our breath here. Let's relax.
You know what that sound was? This is my commentary. I was coming up to scratch my head, and I just whacked my whole headset in my head.
Well, now that we're getting behind the scenes, I just got up for about a minute to walk away and get something while you were talking. So anyway, going back to Guillen, he might be turning into a manager who you give him a pitching staff, and you could pretty much feel pretty confident how he's going to run offensively. You know, the way this team is offensively, it's a power-hitting team, and it pretty much the way they've been playing this year, you don't really need a manager. Although Guillen should be more aggressive, I think he's almost turning into a manager where he needs a pitching staff. You get him some scrappy guys on the offensive side, and he's going to make things happen. But with this club, he's become extremely reliant on Tomei, Canerico, and Dai hitting the ball over the fence.
He's became overly passive, and I've really said that what this team needed during this losing streak, because we can't create the pitching to do good, the only thing you can do and really be truly aggressive is on the base pass, is hitting runs, and they haven't done anything.
They haven't. It's been all season. It hasn't really been this past streak. It's been all season. He has not had met. I mean, and I know, you know, this isn't a particularly fastest team, but you don't need necessarily to have speed to run. You know, Jermaine Dye could steal some bases. Tadi Taguchi could steal some bases.
Well, more importantly, we have a few guys, Tadahito Gucci, obviously Jermaine Dye, and especially A.J. Pruszynski and Tadahito Gucci are two guys that are great contact hitters, and they are perfect for hitting runs.
Yes.
And I realize, you know, you're not going to do a hit and run too often with a guy like Canerico out there, but you know what? When you're in a big losing streak and you can't get a clutch hit, then you got to start trying to do other things and start putting pressure on the other team and start making the other team think about other things because...
Here's, I think, is a great example of what this team has done. I believe it was Friday. Pablo Ozuna started Friday, didn't he?
He was on the base a few times. He didn't run once.
Pablo Ozuna was on first base with two outs, and you have Jim Thome up. Now, you have two outs. If he steals and he gets thrown out, you have Jim Thome starting off the inning. I know he's a power hitter, but he's also a walk threat. And how many times did Jim Thome start off an inning this year with a walk, and things started from there? So why not have Ozuna steal? Why not try to have him swipe second base? Instead, you don't do it because why? Because what if Thome hits a home run? Well, we get two runs right there. That's, I think, the mindset that is wrong with this offense is be aggressive. If an Ozuna steals a base, now you put it in the mindset of Jim Thome, I don't have to hit a home run. I don't have to hit a double. All I have to do is hit the ball up the middle for a single, and he's going to score. And that's what I think is lacking on this team right now.
The best part about that is when you have that mindset where Tomei goes up and says, all I have to do is hit a single, that means he's going to be that much shorter, thinking that much less. Because right now, you know, there's a lot of pressure. These guys are all trying to win the game and win swing of a bat, and it just doesn't work. And it's not the fact that they're just home run happy. It's that it's kind of came to be expected that they're going to live and die by the long ball, so they start thinking about the long ball. If
That's
you steal
point.
Second,
That's
then all
point.
Of a sudden Tomei's up there going, I just need to get a single. So he may be thinking opposite field. He may be doing other things. And in turn, he does it that at bat, he gets a hit. You know, it just makes those little adjustments, and he gets, you know, a little bit of confidence, and all of a sudden he runs off and hits two home runs, you know, the next day or whatever. I mean, that's kind of part of it. You see Paul Konerko, he's made some adjustments. He's trying to stay back on the ball. Right now, about the only hits he's getting are home runs, but he had an opposite field home run yesterday. He's getting real good at bats. You can see he's not quite seeing the ball right now, and he's doing his best to stay back because he was flying open a little too quick, and it was leading to a lot of pop-outs. But in general, why put – yeah,
and
I understand.
You look at I believe it was yesterday's game when – was it yesterday when Jermaine Dye had that two RBI single? And what happened at that bat before was it was a flyout to left field, and Tadi Taguchi tagged. Przinski tagged because they went to third. Now you have a guy in second and third. Now all Dye has to do is put a ball up the middle, which he's very good at when he puts the effort in to do that. And you have two runs. And it's just a different mindset. So they have to. Guillen has to start calling for more hit and runs. And even, you know, even if it looks ugly at times because stuff's going to happen. You know, I know if you remember the other day, the ball was hit to, I believe it was Saturday, the ball was hit to right or center field, and Corey Patterson made an unbelievable play going to his left, I believe. And Juan Uribe was caught off. He was thrown out at first base, I believe. What was the situation? Mm-hmm. I believe Juan Uribe was thinking he was going to fall.
Yeah, I think he just misread, and Patterson made a real good play.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a play where it looks ugly because you were aggressive, but at the same time, if that ball drops, it's a totally different story. So I think they have to be aggressive, and if it means that they're going to go out there and they're going to have ugly base running plays and it's going to be out, then so be it. But you have to take that chance.
Yeah, as long as they're fundamentally doing it right. And I'm not saying being aggressive, a ground ball, you know, Konerko, sending Konerko on a hard hit ground ball to the right field where he's coming from second base. I mean, let's be honest, Cora's done that a few times, and that's just stupid because we all know it takes Paul Konerko twice as long to get home from second than anyone else in baseball. I mean, we can't be aggressive with that.
And he's not going to pick up the speed when he's running. When he's starting to run at second base, he's going to slow down, if anything, going home.
Exactly. And so you just got to pick and choose your spots, but you got to be willing to do it. And you can't be afraid if you're sitting there managing, afraid that, oh, if he gets thrown out and he hits a two-run homer, everyone's going to – you can't think about that. You think if he gets a second, what's more likely, Jim Thome hitting a home run or Jim Thome hitting a single or him hitting a ground ball and somehow it just finds a way to get in? I mean, anything is a lot more possible if you get that guy to second base. And during that game, I was sitting there thinking, well, let's get Pablo in motion. He's fast. I'm most confident in him on the base pass because I've long said that this team needs a change at the top of the order. I like the way Scott Pacedenik approaches his at-bats. I think he does a great job seeing pitches as a leadoff hitter. But the fact is, Ozzie Guillen needs – this is what Ozzie Guillen – he needs some guys with speed because it's the only way he's going to force the issue.
You know, the one thing that Guillen said the other day that bothered me is when they were talking about the home runs, and he said the problem with this team is that the guys around the middle of the lineup aren't doing the little things to, you know, they aren't doing the little things. They aren't bunting. They aren't getting guys over. The guys in the middle are supposed to be hitting home runs. That bothered me because I don't think you could have an offense where, you know, the first three guys and the last three guys are doing the little things, and they're just doing the little things that set the big guys up for home runs. I don't think that's the way it is. I think the middle guys have to do those things too. I think if you have a guy in second base, Jim Thome should try to hit the ball to the right side if he can. You know, if he can to get the guy over and trust that Paul Konerko is going to drive him. I think they have to do those little things just as much as anybody else. I'd like to see some sack flies from these big guys instead of these pop-ups with guys on third base. So I think big guys have to do these things too at times.
I think it comes down to the manager and saying that's, you know, focal point because Jermaine Dye does a very good job at that.
Yes.
And I actually think Paul Konerko, I mean, Paul Konerko usually sacrifices himself to make sure he gets that guy in. And yes, it doesn't work all the time, but Jim Thome doesn't really do that. Jim Thome is more like an Adam Dunn type, just a pure slugger, and I've never been a big fan of that. Now, I like Jim Thome, I gotta admit. I do really like him. But I also think he's a pure slugger, and I think Ozzie's gotta just kinda sit there and say, hey, I know you can hit a home run. If you get a pitch to drive, you know, obviously drive it, because worst case, you're gonna hit a long fly ball that's still gonna get the job done. But if you get a pitch outside,
and that's
and
the
Tommy's
most
a good enough hitter. He has a good
thing.
Eye. I don't want you pulling that ball because we have that guy on third. We got to get him in. So why don't you just go with the pitch and get the job done?
And that's the thing.
Because if you try to swing, you're going to either hit a ground ball.
He has the power where it's going to come to him. You know, it's the approach that has bothered me. And I've said this, you know, I've said this before. His numbers are great. Jim Thome's numbers are absolutely unbelievable. But when I watch him play, they don't add up to me for some reason. They just don't add up. I haven't really been too thrilled with his approach all year long because I think when you have this power, I think it changes the way the team looks and the way the team approaches the game. Because they're relying on a Jim Thome batting third and hitting all those home runs. And I heard somebody talking the other day about making a lineup change where Jermaine Dye bats third, which is what I really was hoping early in the season was going to happen, to start the season where you have Jermaine Dye bat third. I think that actually might be a good idea right now because Jim Thome is a power threat. And I think whenever you have a power threat, he should be more in that fourth or fifth spot where he's more or less a threat and not and get a guy in that third spot who's going to be getting on base more, who has a little bit more speed, who's going to be doing the smaller things that could come, you know, in handy late in the game with the sac fly or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I think the only thing with that issue is that a lot of people would hate to see, because I think Thome is a classic cleanup hitter. That's what I really think he is, and he has a really good on-base percentage, which is nice, and that's obviously why they put him up to the third spot. And I'm a fan, you know, I like Canerco a lot, and I don't think I'd want Canerco hitting the five hole, because I think Canerco's our best hitter.
Yeah,
I've said that all along. Although Jermaine Dye right now is having the best season of any White Sox by far, I mean it's not even close. Especially when you talk offensively.
Yes.
But it's going to be interesting to see because I like Pierzynski in the three hole yesterday because he's kind of a slap hitter and he's doing a good job right now.
And he's hitting the ball opposite field. What's great about Pierzynski all year long is that you know when it comes down to it. When it comes to how late in the game, you know, when it comes to the 7th, 8th, 9th things, I don't necessarily look at the guy producing or not. I look at their approach and how are they going to handle the at bat. And you know, Pierzynski late in the game is going to have 10-15 pitch at bats if he needs to, and he's going to keep on battling and battling and battling. And in that three hole, he's going to make some contact for you. And you know, Gucci has the capabilities of doing that too in certain situations. So I wouldn't mind seeing Pierzynski more in the 3-0, but that's not going to happen. That's
totally unrealistic. But if you're going to give Thome a day off, I don't really mind that.
Yeah.
So much. And speaking of this, we said we think Ken Williams is done. But you know what? I'm changing my mind. He shouldn't be done. Because right now the Baltimore Orioles have turned down a deal that would involve Roy Oswalt, Adam Everett, and Morgan Ensberg. The reason they turned it down is they want to spin Oswalt for Hank Blaylock. This is when Ken Williams gets on the phone. I don't care who he has to give up. I don't care if it's Brandon McCarthy and other prospects. Roy Oswalt is the type of guy that makes his pitching staff that much better. He's under contract long term. And if the Astros are stupid enough to make an offer to the Orioles involving Oswalt, then we need to jump in because Baltimore apparently doesn't have interest in Oswalt and make something happen. Him or Jason Schmidt, and I'm less impressed with Jason Schmidt. I think Schmidt's a very good pitcher, but the whole contract situation.
No, I don't think Schmidt is worth it. I mean, Oswalt is—he's obviously one of the best out there. He has some great stuff, you know, good control, and he's unbelievable. But the problem I would still have is you still have some issues in their rotation at the bottom of it, and their approach offensively you still have some issues there. I think it would be an impact move, and obviously it would make a lot of noise, and it would, you know, maybe even pump up the team. But I still think there's some issues with the team.
Well, there's no doubt there's issues. But all of a sudden, if you have a Roy Oswalt, a Jose Contreras, and a John Garland, that gives you three guys. That means you have a few months to see if Freddy Garcia, Javier Vasquez, or Mark Burley could turn things around and do something adequate. You could always move Vasquez into the bullpen. You could always say, hey, we'll give you a guy like Garcia and McCarthy. See what they do, and that gives you some, you know, some cash and even maybe a top prospect. I mean, to me, Roy Oswalt was one of the premier pitchers in baseball. So you do whatever you can to get a guy like him, and then you hope that you get one other starter. Because even with three good starters and one bad starter, you got a chance in the postseason now. You got a legitimate chance.
Yeah.
Because there's not many teams that are going to trump out four quality starters. Are the Boston Red Sox? No.
No.
Are the New York Yankees? No. Are the Detroit Tigers? Maybe. We'll see how Verlander holds up. You know, we'll see. But right now, they have the best chance of that. I mean, even the Minnesota Twins can't offer that. They could offer, you know, Liriano, Santana, and Radke, but they still have to find that fourth guy. And then in the NL, I think we all know that the NL, watch them all shock everyone and win the World Series or something, but the NL doesn't have any teams with, you know, four quality starting pitching.
I would agree with you. You know, on paper, that would be an unbelievable move. But my whole thing is I really think that this team has the talent and the ability to do something. I just think that their heads are up their ass right now, and it starts with Guillen, like you said earlier. And I think it doesn't matter what they do, this team has to get their heads together and get in the right approach. You know, from the pitching staff standpoint, they're all nibbling. You know, nobody's attacking anybody. You know what I mean? The bullpen needs to get some rest. And if you still have guys in the back of the rotation who are going four innings, it's going to cause problems. Offensively, they got to start, you know, like we just talked about for a few minutes, they got to get their approach down. So, I mean, while Oswalt would bring a whole bunch of talent to this team and it would make them very dangerous, I would love to see this team's approach change first before anything.
I see. I'm not as concerned. Obviously, I think we need to do things different offensively, but by and large, this offense it's the best offense in baseball. I just think there's minor things we could do to tweak and to be better. So it's more perfectionist than me saying we need to do things better offensively, because we do have a damn good offense. And this offense, as is capable of winning World Series. All that matters is the pitching staff pitching very good, because offense doesn't mean squat in the playoffs.
See, I don't know.
You better be able to pitch.
I would hope. I really would hope that this offense will be good enough. I mean, I think if it gets hot at the right time, I think it could be very good. But, you know, the one thing that scares me about this offense is I could see them going in the tank. I could see them completely just going on a cold streak for 3-4 games, and then that's it, and no more. Season's over. And that's one thing I'd like to see this offense just be able to say, listen, well, we're not on our game. Well, we're not doing very good. Can we somehow be able to muster a run by simply having long at-bats, fouling pitches off, and getting into a team's bullpen and doing things that way? And I don't know. I have some serious doubts that this team offensively is capable of doing that. I think they're very powerful, and I think they're very dangerous, and I think they have capabilities of hitting a lot of pitchers. But when they don't is what I'm concerned about. At their worst, can the offense still produce?
It could. I don't know. It's up to manager Ozzie Guillen to push the envelope.
Yeah,
and that's where that type of decision, it comes from the front office. It comes, you know, you send that type of message down to everyone else. You know, if you're management of Enron and you manage it properly, you say, hey, we're going to be ethical, 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 and you drill that down the rest of your organization, and you know, you don't have that problem. But obviously, upper management was not. So you know what happened? Huge scandal. Now, obviously, this is not a huge scandal, but if Ozzie Guillen doesn't want to run, doesn't want to do these things with the middle of the order, why are these batters going to do that? They're not. So it starts with Ozzie. It's one thing for players to execute, and it's not the pitching staff. Ozzie could have done some things different, but it is not his fault that Freddy Garcia sucks. And actually, Garcia's been decent in his last two starts.
Yes, he has.
That Freddy Garcia, you know, Mark Burley, Vasquez has his issues. That has nothing to do with Ozzie Guillen. You can say he tired him out, you know, last year, but these guys have thrown innings a long time. They're veteran pitchers. Mm-hmm. They need to be doing better. They need to do better. So, I mean, let's put that all to rest. And if we can't get a guy like Roy Oswalt or Jason Smith, I got my own idea.
Uh-oh.
And it's not really my own unique idea. It's something I picked up from Sox Talk. And it's also something that Levine has talked about. But Ken Williams is thinking about going out and getting another reliever, so that he can send Brandon McCarthy down to the minors. And I don't know if this reliever is going to come and trade, like we're talking to Roberto Hernandez, to Solomon Torres, just, you know, a guy that could come up and just be that last arm, be a long guy. Or it could be, maybe they think Sean Tracy could be that long guy for a couple weeks. Because let's be honest, the long guy is not going to be the difference here. The long guy is going to pitch in games where we got shelled early on, or, you know, something happened and we need innings. So he's not going to be, you know, costing us games. He's not going to be coming in the eighth.
Well, unless the long man also serves as a bridge pitcher, per se, and you have him in for games like Vasquez or Burley when he's struggling and they're only going five innings and you have a lead and you want to bring in a guy to pitch two or three innings. In that case, the long reliever could be an asset.
Yeah, but in general, I don't think the Sox, they have a lot of arms now. They got, you know, risky. They got quite a few good arms in that pen, so they can figure things out. If they did have one weak guy while they try to, you know, work yes. McCarthy in and then send one of their starters into the bullpen. Because you get Brandon McCarthy, I think the best thing to do is you get him into AAA and you get him to get into a groove.
Now, here's the thing.
Because if he pitches like he did last, let's Let's look at what Jared Weaver. He comes in, the Angels blow up. Liriano, he comes in, the Twins blow up. Justin Verlander. And now it's not just Justin Verlander in Detroit. There's a lot of things, you know, that went right in Detroit. But Justin Verlander comes in, boom. The Tigers really blow up. Good young pitching can help carry a team. It can give a spark. Get a guy like McCarthy.
I'm going to agree with you. I think that actually could be a unique idea if they put him in the minors and they get him going. Now, when he is ready, you have three guys that he could potentially replace as of this point. That's Garcia, Burley, or Vasquez. Now, they all have their pluses and their minuses. Vasquez at least is going to give you five solid innings. Burley has the history behind him, so you have to kind of show him some, put some faith in him in doing well, and I think Garcia has been fairly decent. But if there's one of those three guys who you're going to put in the bullpen, do you go with the route of taking the worst guy out, even though it's very close to decide who the worst guy out, or do you try to get the guy in the bullpen who would be the best reliever?
Well, Javi Vasquez would be the best reliever, hands down.
Okay.
Hands down. I mean, because he's got the stuff, and he pitches good. Or, you know, when he shows all his pitches, he does very good for five innings. We see him gets out. Mark Burley, not really a typical reliever.
No.
And
that's the thing. See, that's Garcia, the thing. Right now, he's pitching their worst, but he wouldn't be the best candidate to go into the bullpen.
But here's my thinking. I don't think it's going to come down to either of those two, because I think Freddy Garcia is going to be placed on the disabled list, if that happens. And this is what I see. You put McCarthy down there, you see what he does. First off, McCarthy has never had time this year to really get in a groove where he's pitching. So you do that, and then you see, will McCarthy pitch like he did last year down in the minors? You get him to that point, and then you say, hey, at this point, now we can make it. Now we have the options here. And not only does that give the Sox options, but you don't think Freddy Garcia, Mark Burley, and Javier Vasquez see that? You don't think that could light a little bit more of a fire under their butt? Obviously, getting whooped the way they are motivates them. But seeing that and knowing that now they really are in jeopardy of losing their job, and none of these guys want to lose that.
Do you place Garcia on the DL with the intentions on him resting for a couple weeks, and then you put him in AAA, let him get a couple starts, and bring him back in September with the expectation that he's going to be back here in that rotation? Or do you simply put him in the DL with, you know, hey, if he comes back, great. If not, oh well.
Well, I think the overall hope would be for him to get some rest and try to get his velocity back up. See if, you know, he's just really tired or, you know, who knows. Because he's lost way too much velocity to really be a good pitcher unless he has great command. And he's never been a great command guy. So he's really, if he's going to rely on an 87-mile-an-hour fastball, and he has the breaking stuff to do it. We said it earlier in the year. But he's going to have to start really throwing strikes. And not just throwing strikes, throwing them where he wants to throw them. And he also has a pretty damn good changeup. You know, especially as of late, his changeup's really improved. So he's going to have to start doing those type of things if he's going to want to be really successful.
Well, you know what? I will say this. You know, beginning of the season, Kenny Williams, in particular, you know, with Ozzie Guillen and the entire Sox organization, were saying, you know, we want to have that luxury of having six starters. We want to have that luxury of having six starters in case one of our guys go down. Well, none of them have gone down, but you could take one down if you want. So if you're going to make a big deal before this season about how you have six starters and how no other team has six starters and how, you know, you have all this insurance, this is the time to use it. So I'm going to agree with you there. If they're going to go out there and make a big deal about having McCarthy as a sixth starter and not giving him up because they want all this depth, use it. Because you have three guys in the rotation who could definitely be replaced right now.
And it's necessary because there's three things we could do. We could go get a Royal as well, which I would love. We could sit back on our hands and hope that our pitchers pitch like they're capable of. And that's not necessarily a horrible idea because it's better than going and giving up something for a guy like Alfonso Soriano who's not going to make a difference.
Nope.
Maybe Soriano gets us in the playoffs. Maybe the plan is Soriano buys you a little time to stay in the race, giving you more time to get your pitchers back. Maybe that's the idea. But the bottom line is this pitching staff will have to do better and a lot better if the White Sox are going to go anywhere. So everything else is a moot point as far as I'm concerned.
Yes. And the only thing I can think of is, you know, when all those rumors were happening, Soriano, I was confused as hell, and it confuses hell, and I was thinking, wow, this would be such a horrible trade. And then I was thinking, the only thing I can think of is that Williams wants to see if he could win it with just offense this year. You know, maybe the Sox are kind of, maybe and the Yankees are kind of thinking the same way. There's not really any pitchers out there, so let's just jack up on the offensive side. Who knows? But,
and that could be a case in point. The only team that really could dominate is Detroit and Minnesota if they're in there. And if Minnesota's in there, the White Sox aren't in the playoffs. I mean, let's be realistic. The Detroit would have to have a monumental collapse for both Minnesota and Chicago to get in the playoffs.
Yes.
And so that tells me we obviously wouldn't have to factor Minnesota into this equation, because if the White Sox are talking playoffs, Minnesota's not in there. So you have Detroit as a good pitching staff. You have Boston. Yeah, Curt Schilling's nice. But you know what? Josh Beckett, he's the most overrated pitcher there is. He gives up so many home runs. He gives up all this stuff.
Thank you.
A great arm. Great arm. But you know what? I'm sick of the Boston media hyping him up and this great rotation that they have. Now, John Lester, yeah, he's been pretty damn good. Papelbon, amazing closer. I mean, I'll give credit. Those two young guys have really produced. But let's not sit here and be fools and think that the Red Sox, yes, Beckett has had playoff success, but Beckett has not had success this year. So there's not many scary rotations. Does Randy Johnson scare people anymore? No. Mike Mussina has been good, but he doesn't scare people.
Every team, and this just goes to Sox fans who panic, every team has issues like the Sox do. You know, this Yankees rotation is not very good. The Red Sox rotation, not particularly good. The Sox have the capabilities, with all their struggles, they have the capabilities with their five starters to wake up and get really hot and enter those playoffs and be the top rotation in baseball. They have the capabilities to do that.
Yeah, the only true dangerous team is the Angels. I said they would make the playoff a while ago, and I may be dead wrong, because this pitching staff the Angels have, if they keep Santana, they keep Lackey, they got Escobar, they got Weaver, and then, you know, maybe Colon comes back again. Who knows about Colon?
Although they shouldn't be expecting that right now.
No, but either way, that's four guys that are good pitchers.
Yes.
And defensively, they're not a strong team like they used to be. But if they could get a Soriano without giving
and
up,
and I think considering
Santana,
Weaver
gives them a little bit more.
Weaver kind of entered the season somewhat late this year. You know, he hasn't really been there since the beginning, has he?
No, Weaver came up later. And
yeah, so
he's thrown innings, but
is he going to have some
more
left?
He should, if all goes well, he should.
And then Santana was in the bullpen last year, I believe, so he got his work in. So, and Lackey, he's just one weird pitcher.
He's a stud.
He's such a gamer. You know he's just going to go out there and battle for you. So this Angel team could be scary. If maybe they get that bat that they need, who knows. But that's going to do it for Dish Week. I know I have intentions on doing a show next week. Do you?
Yes, it's we're going to be consistently back. Maybe we're talking about a trade. Maybe the Sox made a move a week from now. Maybe the Sox have found a way to play winning baseball, because, yes, it was nice to beat Baltimore, and yes,
maybe,
we needed those games. But
maybe August, with the waiver stuff, maybe it gets them a reliever that gets McCarthy into the minors, ready to take over in this rotation, and maybe your dreams come true.
I got my doubts. Like I said, I have very little expectations out of the White Sox right now.
Well,
the way they play baseball is poor.
Fortunately, they're facing the Royals, who can be a pain in the ass team at times, but they are still the Kansas City Royals, so there is some hope right there. Although after it gets hard with the Blue Jays, Yankees, and Tigers. But we'll wait and see till next week, which will be August 7th. August 7th is when we'll be back. We'll be back August 7th. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening. You got to make sure you plug all the shows before you go.
Yeah, talk Bears. Training camp has begun. So, you know, if you're disappointed in the way the White Sox have played, like I have, you know, you could go talk about the Bears. The Bulls, the offseason's kind of quieting down now. Maybe they're going to make that last move. Maybe they're going to get an offensive power forward to join that team and really make them a title contender. If so, and if you're a Bulls fan, check out TalkBulls.com. The Blackhawks, they've got Havlat. They've been talking. Maybe they could get a guy like Gomez who got a big contract. They have a little bit of salary here. They need some more offense. They need some more legitimate players. Maybe the Blackhawks can go make some noise. So if you're a hockey fan and you like the Blackhawks, talk Bhawks.com. And pretty soon, coming to, well, not necessarily the Talk Chicago Sports Network, talk Big10.com. We know college football is about to start. We know we got a lot of college football fans, a part of Sox Talk, a part of our entire network. So that's going to be in the future. We're even going to have a high school sports site. We're not sure of the name yet. Maybe like PrepSports.com. And it's going to be actually plugged by a radio host that does a big-time high school football segment, so it should be a pretty cool thing if any of you follow high school sports. So thanks for listening. I'm glad we're back, and we're going to be back consistently, so hope you guys like it. And if you got any feedback, shoot it over at us at contact@futuresox.com. And as Jim Rome would say, we're out.